did not participate in the last election because of their disabilities and because they couldn't vote privately and independently. If they had wanted to take someone with them into a lever voting machine, yes, they could. Or if they trusted someone to fill out their absentee ballot, they could absolutely vote that way. But, you know, Congress has said that this is very important for people with disabilities to be able to vote without assistance.
No,
and that's why Senator Dole, former Senator Dole, is a big proponent of this.
Yeah. So what's the brand name of the kind of machine that we like? What's that called? Who makes it?
Well, I don't want to mention brand names because there are a bunch of companies that produce the voter verified paper machine. I know Avante is one brand, but there are many others. And because of the passage of the Help America Vote Act with its requirement, there are now many companies that are putting new machines on the market. The other thing that I want to make very, very clear is Rebecca was talking about machines, electronic machines that were networked. In Connecticut, we would not network them. They would be standalone voting machines. And the minimum requirement of the Help America Vote Act is one electronic machine per polling place. So if you can envision this, a polling place with several voting machines, our lever voting machines would still be there, but there would be an additional electronic machine for people who wanted to verify their vote or who had disabilities and wanted to use that type of machine. And remember, we've been voting on lever voting machines in the state since the 1930s, and we've never had any kind of paper verification that the machine counted our vote. And every election, there are examples of problems with lever machines, as a matter of fact.
So you can yank them open and look at them anyway. I mean, there's something you can look at, right?
Yeah, but what about what happened 3 years ago in a municipal election in Bridgeport where no votes were recorded with the three council candidates who were on the ballot, and they a Superior Court had to order a new election?
Imagine something like that happening in Bridgeport. It does... Well, listen, I this all sounds good to me, and I mean, we got to fix this problem because if we don't fix it the right way, we could wind up, through malfeasance, electing a corrupt authoritarian bully. Oh, whoops, too late. A little joke there. Anyway, we have to go. Susan Weissmuth, Secretary of State, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye. A friend of mine. Okay, we're back. Okay, I have to complete this one thought. I was talking to him before about Mark Ryan. And really, you know, I got no problem with Mark Ryan. And I know he works long days and all this kind of stuff. And he's, you know, he's a dedicated public servant. And I mean, nobody's ever really questioned Mark Ryan's competence. But I do think it's kind of, I mean, if I were St. Francis, about to hire a CEO for, you know, $500,000 or $600,000 a year, I'm not sure I would grab the guy who has been the chief financial officer for an administration that appears to be beset by financial corruption. I mean, I know that no one has ever suggested that Mark Ryan is guilty of any of that, and I don't think he probably is, but an awful lot of people seem to be able to get away with an awful lot of stuff. I mean, it sort of does mean that he wasn't aware that it was happening or something. Anyway, I want to move on from that to Dean Pagani, who's also trying to get a new job. Now, he's the chief of staff for Governor Rowland, and his reason, for seeking a new job, I think, is really special. He said that,
to get the hell out.
He would be taking a pay cut if he did get this new job, but it would also mean that he would be getting rid of the pressure of running the governor's office during the impeachment inquiry, which he sees, a job that he sees, would be all-consuming. He would be, effectively speaking, as they say in The Godfather, a wartime consigliere, you know, which is, and there's a moment, in fact, where they tell Robert Duvall that he can't be a wartime consigliere.
Is it like being a war president?
Similar to being a war president, yes. But the consigliere is, of course, the advisor and stuff. And Pagani says, I'm not sure, to be fair to the governor, I can promise that level of work. So what he's doing is he's being really fair to the governor. He's really saying, you know, in this time of crisis, when you're... ass is on the line, really, you'd be better off with a stranger with no training or familiarity with his office. Because really, I can't put in those days. I, otherwise I'd do it, obviously. But just to be fair to you, I'm not sure that I can work, you know, those 18-hour days that are going to be involved here in getting you through this. So really, I think you'd be better off with somebody, you know, that you don't know. And who's never done this job and doesn't know where... I mean, you know, I just that doesn't really... If I were Roland, that wouldn't really ring true to me. That's why he was doing it. Because he just would feel so guilty if he didn't work hard enough. And really, you know, the governor would be better off with somebody with little or no experience. Well, we have a memo to Gabe Kapler. Just because it's Patriots Day doesn't mean you have to be a Kenyan to run, okay? It's time for Sports on Twitter, our French sports discussion segment. I'm back, Monsieur Ron Lodin, Michel Bruce Stevens, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
Louis, I can add.
Well, he's
we'll
pleaded,
take your word for it.
He's pleaded no contest in this one. So a judge fined him $1,000, ordered him to serve 30 days of home detention, and required him to use a device in Nevada that will measure his blood alcohol content before he can start his car for the next year.
Boy, I'm glad you said blood alcohol content. I was getting kind of scared there.
All right, I'll quit with that.
Well, we are talking about Dennis Rodman, aren't we? Although, let me just say, in terms of sports motorcycle crashes, nothing will ever really top Mike Tyson. Because remember when he crashed his motorcycle and he said that he missed his exit?
Mm-hmm.
He was in Manchester when his motorcycle crashed. His exit was in Farmington.
Well, he's right. He missed it.
He did miss his exit.
By a rather large margin.
Yeah.
The Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame.
Well, if you're scared of going to the dentist, have I got a great solution for you? Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld. That's right, Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld, right there in Avon. Well, I have to tell you this incredible story. I forgot this. This is really true. Saturday night, I'm on Broadway outside Jumpers, which is this new Tom Stoppard play.
Yeah.
And I hear these two people calling to me, and it's Dr. Jerry and his wacky wife, Mary. It's a small planet, huh?
Well, it's a small planet. Yeah. You know.
Sure, well, they're theater goers, aren't they? He specializes in people who are afraid of the dentist. He's so dedicated to making your experience very comfortable, he provides headphones with your personal choice of music. We have to bring your personal choice of music. He's got state-of-the-art equipment and already high standards of care have just been raised with the new breakthrough technology, the new dental laser. Welcome to the comfort zone. No drill, no noise, no numbness. Quicker and quieter, the state-of-the-art water laser replaces the drill in most instances. No more drilling if you go to Dr. Rosenfeld, who caters to ecology, so gentle, exceptional dentistry, maximum comfort, bridges, crowns, bleaching, bonding, it doesn't matter. The care and comfort is a chief priority for Dr. Rosenfeld and his staff, Linda and Magdalena. Call 674-0707 for an appointment with a smile you've always wanted in the atmosphere that spells success. Most insurance is accepted, located in Old Avon Village on Route 44 in Avon at the sign with the silver toothbrush. Easy parking in some evening hours. Call Dr. Jerry, the dentist who caters to cowards. Call today, 674-0707.
Picture a boy with 100...
Yeah.
Well, I just know that.
The intruders.
We just...
The intruders. We did Cowboys to Girls.
That was their big hit. You are right. Yeah, we have that too. If you need.
This is one case I needed for what?
You might need to hear Cowboys to Girls at some point.
I think I can probably manage to get through the rest of the day without it.
We're going
to
go on living.
You say so.
Should we talk to Fred from Farmington?
Oh, I think so.
Okay. Oh, you know, before we do Fred from Farmington, Fred, just hang on for 2 seconds. One thing we wanted to mention is we have this comment line, and we use it. People call in, and they make comments, and we use it to make these promos that run sometimes. Well, at the moment, we only have comments, many, many hundreds of comments, from people who hate us, who want nothing more for us to die face down in our own vomit. And so we actually need some nice comments just to kind of balance that out a little bit.
That's going
to
happen.
If you have mercy in your heart or you love us or whatever, call 677-6700, extension 400. 677-6700, extension 400. Leave some kind words or sexual propositions or anything of kind of a positive nature.
Apparently, we're communists. That's what I was just told.
Okay, so now Fred from Farmington.
Yeah. Fred?
Hello?
Hi. Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
I have a question about Joe Lieberman.
Shut it off. Too much.
We've got time to take some phone calls, 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, or *WTIC. If you are interested in all this voting machine stuff, there really is a pretty good article. Dana Whelan had called my attention to it earlier today, and I just never got around to pulling it up. And then, since I didn't, she would have copied it for both of us. But it's from the April Vanity Fair. And it's a very lengthy article about this exact problem. And, you know, it's already happened. I mean, in the primaries in Florida, for example, they had a situation where the runner-up lost by 12 votes. They had a 130-vote discrepancy between people who signed in and people who actually voted. Now, either 134 people checked in at the voting tables and then for some reason or other didn't vote, or the other possibility is that the machines failed to count 134 votes for some reason. But what was alarming was there was no way to audit that, no way to check it. The machines just didn't do that. There wasn't any kind of, you know, secondary system for looking at what had happened. So anyway, then there's a lot more other stuff like that. You know, we haven't really revisited this thing, although I guess they went before the town council last night about this and got nowhere. You know, this thing with this poor dumb dog, you know, this dumb dog Max, who was a golden retriever, and he was basically, he was a 10-month-old dog who was sleeping. A 12-year-old kid from his own household just ran up to him and kind of hugged him, and he was just so startled that he bit the kid, yeah. You know, not severely. The kid didn't require, you know, a significant amount of medical treatment or anything like that. And the family doesn't regard the kid as the dog is dangerous or anything. You know, and this dog...
Yeah, but what do they know?
This dog is doing serious time, you know. As a matter of fact, for every day that Governor Rowland is a free man and this dog is behind bars, I think, you know, a double injustice. You know what Governor Rowland ought to do? He ought to read a serve part of Max's sentence.
Stick him in a cage.
Yeah. But, you know, this whole thing is insane. And Lori Fast called us up and said that one of the problems is that these animal control officers have almost unreviewable decisions. I mean, they're answerable to almost nobody, except, I guess...
But what is to be gained by this for anybody? Well, the animal control officer. What does the animal control officer get out of this?
Well, I don't know, although this apparently is not the first time that this animal control officer has ordered euthanasia under somewhat questionable circumstances. There's another case in Watertown, Bertha Owens. One of her dogs got loose and allegedly bit a woman, but Mrs. Owens never saw any evidence of the bite and was not aware she could appeal this euthanasia order, and so the dog got put down. But the town's now nervous because if they cut Max loose, and then he bites somebody else, they feel that they might have some exposure at that point. But I see all of this is unreasonable. You know, this family has taken every possible step that you could ask them to take.
The dog's been up at Tufts twice.
Yeah.
One of the leading veterinary schools in the country. And they've pronounced the dog fine. They think the likelihood of the dog biting anybody again is... Slim or none.
I feel stupid bringing this up because there are people right now who are significantly mistreated and unjustly imprisoned in Connecticut prisons right now. And, you know, I mean, we shipped people out to Wallens Ridge. And I mean, I understand this is just a dog. But still, I mean, you know, we care about our dogs, too. Whether that makes sense or not, it doesn't matter. It's clearly wrong, and it's visiting a great hardship on the family. And, you know, I mean, it's stupid. And I can't believe there isn't a way to cut through all this stuff and just get it over with. You know, I mean, get the dog out. I don't mean get it over with in the sense of put the dog down. The dog does.
First of all, the dog bit this kid who was a member of the family.
Yeah.
The dog hasn't done any harm to anybody outside of that household.
Right.
The family would like to have the dog back.
Right.
It's been proven at a leading university that there's a slim chance the dog would bite again. What the hell is the problem?
I actually do think this is an example of a bureaucracy that takes itself more seriously than common sense. Common sense seems to call for this. I mean, it is a weird mirror of the actual human prison system, because by the time this dog gets, the dog's been in since November, the dog will be a psycho killer by the time it gets out.
Right. There is a chance of that.
You know, it's exactly what we do to people. We take people with some kind of low-level possession bus and we keep them in prison until they're dangerous. And they're going to do the same thing with the dog. Put the dog out, really. I mean, if Roland were smart, he'd pardon the damn dog, get him out of there. I mean, I know he said
I think he's tried to do something.
Well, the Department of Agriculture guy works for him.
Hey, get the dog out, or, you know, you'll be opening up a consulting business with Ted Anson in about 5 minutes. That's what you do. All right, we're back with the phones. We're going to go to Teresa in Bristol.
Teresa, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Okay. The dog warden in Watertown,
mm-hmm.
I think he's on a power trip.
Yeah, you think?
Just a little bit of one. And I really think that the town council needs to look at their ordinances or whatever it is that determines how the dog warden is elected or appointed or whatever, because I think this is a lifelong gig for this woman.
I think you're right.
And It doesn't sound like she has any clue about animals.
It doesn't seem that way.
I got bit by a dog when I was little, and you want to know something? I mean, I had to get stitches the whole nine yards. It was my own damn fault. I told my parents what happened. They looked at me, and they said, well, that was your fault that it happened.
Yeah, in this case, it does look like, I mean, there really was no basis for some. I mean, some of this was a language problem, too, I think, because what happened was...
They're foreign, aren't they?
Yeah, they're from Korea, and... The animal control officer came out there, and she said, has the dog ever bitten before? Did he ever bite before? And I guess in Korean, there aren't a series of words that mean nip and things like that. And so these people thought, this is a puppy. So they said, well, yeah, I mean, you know, he has. I mean, what they meant was the way the puppies do when they're teething and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And nipping and biting and stuff like that. That's all that they meant. But I think the animal control officer, you know, at that point just took the dog, not understanding what they meant. And this whole misunderstanding has just deepened since then.
I mean, this is another example of how zero tolerance is really
good
not
point.
Good.
Yeah, good point.
Because, I mean, it's like, you know, use some common sense here, people.
Right.
The dog got startled.
Right. Same thing with the Thai law and the ecstasy in the Rolls Royce. It just seems unfair to have one blanket rule for everybody. Anyway, thanks for calling. All right. Okay, maybe that wasn't a good analogy. All right, let's talk to Locutus. We're not afraid of you. You know, we're not afraid of you.
Okay.
Okay.
So this dog warden, in addition to being an idiot, is also a filthy racist.
Well, why is that?
Because the family are foreigners, right?
Well, just because the family are foreigners doesn't make that. I mean, the dog warden need not be a racist.
All right, well, but it does not looking good for the dog warden.
No.
That's
fine. You know, the dog warden is not going to be enshrined, you know, in public memory with any great fondness.
Okay. So, Carl, let me ask you one question.
What?
Okay? You there?
Yes.
All right. How long before this phony baloney Air America is going to be exposed for what it is?
And what is it?
You know what it is.
It's a left-to-center talk radio network.
No. And you know who's paying for it.
Who's paying for it? I don't know who's paying for it. We don't have time for this to be Socratic.
You know
just
who's
say
for it. George Soros is paying for
this. Oh, part of it. Yeah, he pays for my salary, too. Anyway, we have to go. Thanks for your call. Thanks to our producer, Bobby Sherwood.